Welcome to the Energy Medicine and Healing Summit, where you'll discover how to take your health into your own hands from today's top energy medicine experts and healers. Share this powerful event with your friends and family, and join in our conversation on Facebook at The Shift Network. And now your host, Dondi Dalin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm so happy you have joined us today. I am Dondi Dalin, and I am very excited to introduce our awesome guest today, Pamela Miles. Pamela Miles has been practicing meditation for over 50 years and Reiki for 30 years. She is internationally known for her pioneering work bringing spiritual practice to mainstream medicine. She has taught Reiki at medical schools, including Yale and Harvard, and is the author of the award-winning book, Reiki, A Comprehensive Guide. We're so excited to have Pamela. Pamela, welcome, welcome to this show.
Thank you so much, Dondi. I'm very excited to be here with you.
Thank you. Well, we are ready to listen to you give us your wisdom. I'm very intrigued that you have taught Reiki at medical schools, including Yale and Harvard. That is wonderful and brilliant. I want to go to the beginning because we have people listening who are from all different modalities of healing work, and some are brand new to it. So I'd love to start with Reiki, where it began, what it is, what Reiki means, what the word means. Maybe you can take us to the basics and then get into the Reiki work and what it looks like.
Reiki is a spiritual practice that can be traced back to a man named Mikao Usui, who lived from 1865 to 1926. And around 1922, he had a very profound spiritual experience as Satori while he was on a prolonged fasting and meditation retreat on Mount Kurama. And that experience is what led to the practice that we refer to as Reiki today. Usui was unusual in that although his culture was still quite provincial, you know, and normally a breakthrough like this would have been kept just for the family and close students, he was a very progressive man, a visionary, who wanted this spiritual practice to be available widely to anybody who was interested. And interested, I should specify, meant people who were willing to pay for the training. So this, I mention that because it's a big question in American Reiki practice. But in Asia, you know, there's more of an understanding that there are fees involved and that in an emergency, of course, you do what you can do, as Usui and his students did when there was a tsunami and an earthquake in Tokyo, and they went around and offered to practice Reiki on anyone who was suffering from that. And the way that Reiki is practiced at the beginning level, the entry level, is by simple laying on of hands. And Usui had specific protocols, and he passed, well, in the 4 years that he actively taught, he taught over 2,000 people in Japan. But at the end of that time, when he died, he had trained 16 Reiki masters. And that's the kind of proportion that we have seen until Reiki practice came to the U.S., when now everybody is a Reiki master. But, you know, this is one of the things that we can talk about in a little more detail because people don't need to be Reiki masters. They really just need a very basic class, a first degree Reiki class, because that's the simple practice. If we were sitting in front of each other, I would be placing my hand on my chest and saying, now I'm practicing Reiki, and then remove my hand and say, now I'm not. Because at the first degree level, it's really that simple. And for most people living in today's world, that simplicity of access is a huge, huge advantage. There is not a lot that we know about why the touch of a Reiki practitioner's hand makes a difference, but we do have some research data and a lot of anecdotal evidence that through an unknown mechanism, a Reiki practitioner's hand influences the system to find its way back to balance. So that means things like the breath becomes more open and natural, and the heart rate improves, blood pressure improves. And note that I say improves because people often say, oh, Reiki practice lowers blood pressure, but it only lowers blood pressure if you have high blood pressure. If your blood pressure is normal, you won't notice a difference. And if your blood pressure is low, what I've seen is that people's blood pressure then tends to rise to a normal range. So the idea of balance is very, very important in terms of understanding the value of the practice and how it works, that instead of imposing a very specific result on the body the way a prescription does, for example, instead what Reiki practice as a spiritual practice does is help the system find its own deep center and start reorganizing from that so that all of the various parts of the person are functioning in harmony with each other. So you let go of the dissonance and the resistance, and you see more harmony and consonance in the person's system. And that's important not only because it feels good, but also because it's in that state, which is referred to medically as the parasympathetic nervous system dominant state, that our own self-healing mechanisms are able to function. Because literally our bodies are a go-no-go system. Either we cope with stress or we self-heal. We can't do both at the same time.
That's interesting. Either we cope with stress. Can you say that again just one more time about the self-healing? Because that was a good point, and I want you to say it how you said it.
Either we cope with stress, which means that our nervous system is dominated by the sympathetic nervous system, the fight, flight, or freeze response. Or we move into the rest and digest phase, which is the parasympathetic nervous system. And when the parasympathetic nervous system is in charge, so to speak, because both parts of the system are always functioning, but it's like who's on top. So when the parasympathetic nervous system is dominant, that's when our self-healing mechanisms are able to come into play. You can think of it as this way. It's not that our bodies don't know how to heal. It's that they forget how to gate back to that state in which they're able to. And something about the touch of a Reiki practitioner's hand seems to remind the system. I think of it as E.T. phone home. Like, oh, yeah, that's what's real. You know, that's who I am. And this is why I like to stress, I mean, not just because I'm kind of a spiritual activist, but I like to stress that Reiki is a spiritual practice, because that's the primary mechanism, is remembering one's own essential spiritual nature. And when we become more aware of that, then everything else slips into better relationship.
That's nice. Thank you. Thank you for expanding on that. So you're talking about Reiki as a spiritual practice. And when you say that, some people may ask, well, is it a religious practice? Because I know that people hear that Reiki can come from a higher power. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I'll try to talk about it for just a little bit. It's actually something I could talk about for a really long time. So in religion, we have many differences, right? There are, you know, endless systems of dogma that people subscribe to, and that's what unifies them in that religion. And often, part of that dogma is that this is the true religion. So there's a point at which religion can be misunderstood to be exclusive, to push other people out of the tribe, so to speak. Whereas in spirituality, we realize the essential oneness of all being. And this is a place where science, broadly speaking, actually agrees with spirituality, you know, that everything comes down to one. And when we don't have an experience of that, we may hold it as a belief, and that may get infused with other beliefs, and then we start moving towards the differences and the distinct community that's different from other communities. But with spiritual practice, instead of looking outside to see, well, who feels the same way I do? What's the tribe where I belong? We start to experience the profoundness of our own being and come to that experience of oneness that exists within every human heart. The thing about oneness, Dandi, is that there's only one. So every person who has that experience of oneness within their heart, it's the same oneness. And it manifests as different people, and it manifests as different dogmas and different religions. But in spirituality, there's no belief, there's practice and unfolding experience. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense, and you did that very well in a very short amount of time, and we appreciate it, so thank you for that. So I'm thinking about Reiki, and I'm quite familiar with Reiki, but for people who aren't, can you tell us exactly what Reiki work looks like? Would we be on a table, a massage table? Would someone put their hands on us? Would they touch us? Would they be having their hands hover above us? Do they try to move the energy, or do they let the energy move on its own? Can you give us a picture of what that a Reiki session or a Reiki treatment looks like, and can we do it on ourselves?
So to preface all of that, I just want to say that many people, including many Reiki practitioners, but certainly the mainstream public, are not aware of the amount of diversity that exists in the Reiki community. The term Reiki has no restriction around it. And for many of us, it refers to the practice that can be traced back to Macau Usui, as I mentioned earlier. But not everybody has that understanding. And, you know, when the practice was brought to the United States in 1938, it was brought in a way that was very, had the integrity of the Japanese practice and was simplified, probably with the understanding that Americans would never have the kind of training and certainly did not have the cultural foundation that the Japanese did. But since the Reiki master Hoao Takada, who brought the practice to the U.S. in 1938 with her Japanese Reiki master, who was trained by Usui, the founder, since she died in December of 1980, within about 10 years, Americans had kind of done what Americans do. You know, we make, and I can say this as an American, we make everything bigger, better, longer, stronger, and sometimes we innovate without giving ourselves adequate experience of what it is we think needs to be improved. And that's exactly what happened with Reiki practice. And ironically, a very simple practice now has become, in many people's minds, very complicated because there wasn't enough practice experience before people started, you know, innovating and figuring they had a better way. So I'm sorry, that's kind of a long, drawn-out introduction, but without knowing that, I can't talk about what a Reiki treatment might look like. So the first thing that people need to know is that they have to ask, because who knows what somebody thinks Reiki practice is. And if they have a website, you know, if they're a professional, then probably there's information there. But you want to make sure that you know before you make an appointment, before you put your money down, that you know what's going to happen in that time and what it's going to look like. So this is what my treatment looks like. And I'm a very traditional Reiki professional. I have a treatment table. And my clients lie fully clothed on the treatment table. And that fully clothed part is really important. There's no reason to disrobe for a Reiki treatment. And many times people, you know, have blankets over them. You don't have to touch skin. Traditionally, we place hands on, for me, it's a series of 12 placements, non-invasive placements on the head and the front and back of the torso. But again, different Reiki practitioners have different protocols, so they may use other placements or more or less. And traditionally, we are placing our hands. It's a light resting of the hand, so there's no pressure and there's no manipulation. And these are two of the reasons why Reiki practice is safe. You know, because, for example, massage is very, very beneficial, and there's tons of research that supports that. But there are some medical conditions when people cannot safely receive a massage. So that's not the case with Reiki practice. There are no known medical contraindications because the touch is light and non-manipulative. And if needed, if there's a burn, for example, you can float your hands off the body, although it's pretty uncomfortable for the practitioner to do that. And, you know, we have a lot of research, not just in the benefits of massage, but also the benefits of appropriate human touch. That's healing to people. So given that, and the fact that even in Japan, where, you know, in the early 1900s, touch was not happening in Japan as commonly as it is in today's world outside of Japan. Why wouldn't we touch? you know, so I encourage people to look for a practitioner who touches. And then after the treatment is finished, to be given some time, a few minutes, whatever you need, lying there until you feel ready to slowly get up. And that's important because you're likely to be a whole lot more relaxed than you imagined you would be. And we never want to jerk ourselves out of a deeply relaxed state. It's not good for the nervous system. The idea is to, you know, gradually become more aware of our body, roll to one side, eventually push up to sit, and then wait there. Because if you're going to get lightheaded, if you got up too fast, that's where it will happen. And then when you're ready, you know, move to a chair and maybe have a brief conversation with the Reiki professional just to make sure you have your questions answered. You know what your options are from there. What is not part of a traditional Reiki treatment is a psychic reading. And again, this is something that, you know, has been added on. But if you want a psychic reading, then that's fine. But I've also seen people who have gone into a Reiki treatment not expecting it, and particularly hearing it at the end of the session when they feel, you know, very present and a little bit vulnerable, you know, to then have the practitioner's ideas be thrown at them, that they've experienced that as being pretty invasive. So if that's not what you want, make sure that you know in advance that that's not going to happen.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that advice and some of those tips, like when we're calling a Reiki practitioner to look at the website, to ask questions, to be inquisitive. So when we're doing this, how can we know if a Reiki professional is qualified? What kinds of answers would they be giving us, or maybe some specific questions about what we could ask them?
Well, ask about the specifics of the treatment, you know, including details like, will we be in a private room? Will there be animals in the room with us? You'd be surprised what I've heard. You know, I'm not making this up.
What kinds of animals?
What kinds of animals? But you want to ask about the training. And I'm so glad you brought this up, Dandi, because it's so important. A credible, qualified professional will be delighted to be interviewed. I know when people ask me, I always feel so happy that they are, you know, really taking their time to find someone who is not only qualified but a good match for them. So don't be shy to do this. Ask about the training. And what you're looking for is somebody who has been trained in person, has been in the room with his or her Reiki master. And I personally think that a group class is a great advantage over private training because there's more voices in a group class. And you want a class that runs maybe 10 to 12 hours over 2 or 3 days. Or more. This is one of those rare situations in which more really is better. More training is generally better training. And ask the person what degree Reiki practice they're at. So the options are first degree, second degree, and Reiki master degree. To receive a hands-on treatment, you only need a first degree practitioner. But if the person has second degree and if they consider themselves Reiki masters, what you're looking for is that the trainings at the different levels happened at different periods of time that hopefully are at least 6 months, well, 6 months between first degree and second degree. And then I look for years after second degree before someone would embark on Reiki master training and Reiki Master training that is long. You know, I did an apprenticeship over a year to become a Reiki Master. So you want to really ask about the training, ask the person what their understanding of Reiki practice is, and what makes them unique. You know, what is their particular perspective? While you're listening, if you're on the phone or watching, you know, you're getting a sense of the person. Is this somebody I'm comfortable with? Because that's really important. It could be like with a doctor, although doctors have years and years and years more training than Reiki practitioners do. You know, there can be a doctor who has excellent training, but you're not comfortable with that person. So do you really want to receive care there? So if you are getting all good answers that you're comfortable with, there's one final question, and for me, this is the only question that's the deal breaker, and that is, do you practice daily self-Reiki? Because if the professional does not practice daily self-Reiki, that tells you a lot about how they value the practice. You know, someone who gets her hands on herself every day and goes through a daily practice. Again, remember, this is a spiritual practice. Like if you wanted to go to a meditation group, wouldn't you want to have a meditation group leader who actually meditates on her own every day? So, and if you're going to learn to practice, because yes, you can learn to practice Reiki on yourself and informally on your family and friends and your pets, you want a teacher who actually values the practice enough to practice on herself every day, because that practitioner will always have a greater depth of understanding, not only of the practice, but also of what you are going through. So he or she will be able to support you better. Helpful?
Very helpful. All of this has been so helpful today, Pamela. You've talked a little bit about the history of Reiki, which I did not know a lot of about, that Reiki truly is a spiritual practice, which means that we are all connected, we all come together as one, and that Reiki helps us to remember our spiritual center, that all Reiki practices are different. So when we're choosing a Reiki practitioner or a Reiki practice, to be inquisitive, to find the right Reiki master for us, and to ask that very good question which you put in there at the end, and it's so important, do you practice daily self-Reiki? So we can really find a great person to match with us. I want to let the listeners know that you are so generously offering a free Q&A for them, because there are misunderstandings about Reiki. There is confusion about Reiki, and we could only spend a half hour together today. So I want to give that URL, that website, so people can write it down. This is going to be for April 12th. April 12th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. This will be with Pamela. You can join live, and you can also leave questions if you catch the recording. This will be at energymedicinesummit.com/Pamela. I'll say it one more time, energymedicinesummit.com/Pamela. And Pamela, I just thank you for that. That's a fantastic offer that you're giving all of the listeners. We appreciate that. Before we go, we would love to know, is there one thing that you would like to leave us with, a next step or something for us to think about in the world, the beautiful world of Reiki?
There is one word that I would like to leave everyone with, and that word is balance. And if you remember balance, and that Reiki practice encourages balance throughout your whole system, then you will be able to start discerning what you hear about Reiki practice that makes sense and what really doesn't make sense. So, for example, that's another reason why there are no known medical contraindications to Reiki practice offered appropriately, because balance is never dangerous. So people can be under conventional medical treatment. You know, I've set up programs in hospitals for cancer patients undergoing chemo and radiation and surgery. And what Reiki practice can add to your conventional medical care, whatever care you and your doctor feel you need, is that it engages your body in self-healing. Because medical care is done to you. And sometimes, you know, there are really pretty intense side effects. And the further away from our center, the less equipped our body is to self-heal. So having this practice remind your body of its own capacity to heal can make a huge difference, not only in prevention, you know, in maintaining your health, but also if you do hit a rough spot, it can really improve the ease with which you go through your conventional treatment and the likelihood of a good outcome.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Pamela. Thank you for spending this time with us today.
Thank you so much, Dondi. I've really enjoyed it.
Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for the Energy Medicine and Healing Summit, brought to you by the Shift Network. You can add every teaching and transcript to your personal library by visiting energymedicinesummit.com/upgrade. To learn more about awakening to your full potential and together co-creating a world that works for all, visit theshiftnetwork.com. Thank you again for joining us and for sharing this life-changing information with your friends and family.